What's good? What's good? We are back. Another episode of the Paul Pickett Podcast. And it's an absolute honor for me to bring on my next guest. He's an absolute veteran in combat sports. Been fighting professionally since 2001. He's fought in the UFC, Bellator, Shark Fights, the RFA, KSW, and most recently has made his way into the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, otherwise known as BKFC. Let's bring on the one and only Houston, the assassin, Alexander.
What's up,
Houston?
What's
how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. What's going on with you?
You know, just trying to ramp up this fight content, man. And I felt like, you know, you were probably one of the more credible guys to probably interview, especially with the nothing going on.
I'm really mad at you, right? Because in the intro, you used the old picture of me. You should have found a better picture, man. That was the old picture.
Oh, man, I'm sorry, man. So I want to start here, man. I kind of do my interviews a little different, but yeah. What was life like growing up in Nebraska?
Oh man, we moved. My family moved to Nebraska in the early '80s. Where okay. I'm originally from East St. Louis, Illinois.
Okay.
Growing up in Nebraska was probably like any other kid in the '80s. You know, it was real simple, and I came up during a time of hip hop. So
okay.
I got really deep into hip hop, even, you know, living in a state like Nebraska.
That's crazy. I love hip hop. My other show is actually hip hop based, where I interview a lot of the old '90s rappers, typically a lot.
Uh huh. Well, we now, know. I've been in radio for a long time, and my partner and I. DJ Rip, he actually manages the likes of Grandmaster Flash, DJ Cash Money, you know, a lot of the old school heads, you know, he's been around them for a while.
Yeah, that's the era I definitely love. Now, you played high school football and you wrestled. Is it wrestling that kind of veered you off into the ways of MMA?
I think coming up in high school, you either play sports, or you was a part of the debate team, or you was an ROTC. And I think I just decided to do sports, man. That was two of the sports that I enjoyed doing.
Damn, so the debate, being on the debate team was a big thing back then.
I guess so. I wasn't on the debate team, but you know, that was something the other kids, I'm sure they had the option to do.
Now, there's a specific fight I want to ask you about. Before I ask you, though, what's the fight for you in MMA that stands out as probably your most memorable?
Oh, man. You know, coming up in the ranks, I fought in Des Moines. That was some guy who was probably close to 400 pounds.
Wow.
And I just remember, you know, taking this guy and suplexing him in the middle of the ring. And we broke the board. He broke the end. He broke the middle of the board. That's how, and the, you know, fights ended after that. And if someone in Des Moines probably has the film, I had plenty of witnesses from it. But that was before the time of YouTube and internet. So when I slammed that guy in the middle of the ring and we broke the ring, it's like it was like something out of wrestling, like the WWE wrestling. It was, you know, that was probably one of my most memorable.
How old were you then?
Oh man, probably late 20s, early 30s.
I mean, that's a lot of power to pick up somebody 400 pounds, I would think.
Yeah, man. But hey, I was pretty, I'm a little bigger back then, so a little stronger back then.
Now, there's a fight I specifically want to ask you about is Kimbo Slice.
Yeah, a lot of people want to ask me about that fight.
Now, how big was that fight at that time?
No, it was big, but it wasn't, you know, as big as maybe a Conor McGregor fight, but it was pretty big. And at the time, you know, Kimbo was he was the it thing. So I guess it was big enough to where the UFC, even though he lost in the house that he was in, they kept him around. So they kept him around just to benefit from him, and you know, I guess because of him, he was pretty big.
Is that basically where the politics kind of come in with the fight game, where somebody's got a lot of fame or a lot of followers? They really try to push that guy as much as they can.
Yeah, it's always that way, And no matter what, if an organization or there's a particular wave of anyone, any type of sports, any type of individuals, of course they're going to gravitate to that person. So I didn't mind. But what you shouldn't do is that if you're going up against an opponent or you're on a team, and you shouldn't allow the refs or the judges to judge it. Because, I honestly don't think we won that fight. Yeah. But in the eyes of people who don't know MMA, he probably won.
And I've definitely heard a lot of people in a lot of different sports say they think, refs rig some games because, the league is invested in a specific team to win, or,
That's why you never let it go to the judges. You never let the refs dictate it. You just go in there. If you are a fighter, go in there and whoop somebody's ass.
Now, you're 52 now, right?
Yep.
Now, a lot of fighters at your age would typically be retired, man, but you decided to get in the bare knuckle. What was that about?
Oh, man, you know what? I was asked by a good friend of mine in Nebraska, Train. He has DC fights here in Nebraska, and they approached him about bringing the organization to Omaha to promote. Uh-huh. Obviously, I became one of the flagship fighters out of this area.
Yeah.
And they asked me to do it, and I didn't mind doing it because I'm always in shape. I'm always ready to, I'm still fighting at an elite level. So, when I was asked to do it, I said no problem.
Like when I interviewed Chris Lytle, he said he thought it was going to be like a bunch of guys in jeans with cars around and, everybody just yelling and screaming. What did you think it was going to be at first?
Well, apparently he doesn't use the internet. So as soon as I found out about what the organization was about, I went on the internet. I saw the round ring, and I saw that they stand you right there in the middle. Hey, that right there was something I was really intrigued about, and I was like, that suits me just fine. I like banging like that. So pause, but I like banging like that. and it was something that I was very intrigued about, and it's something I knew I could do and making an immediate impact.
Now, you think having all the fight experience you've had kind of made it a little easier for you to transition into bare knuckle?
Yeah, well, I was doing bare knuckle before I was doing MMA.
Okay.
I was already doing bare knuckles on the street.
Yeah.
It was an easy transition. But I think, with MMA, doing all the, different styles of fighting, and to me, bare knuckle, it's easy. It's an easy transition.
Now, when you fought, I think his name was Wes Combs, like you knocked him down and then you hit him again when he was down. Was that the MMA still in you?
You know what? To be honest, it might have been, but I was always taught to go after your opponent until they're down. So, I didn't realize that when I hit him that, he was falling down. I thought in my mind, he was running away.
Yeah.
So since I thought he was running away, I just reacted. So, but you see, after that fight, we corrected that right away.
Yeah, I figured that when I watched it, I was like, "Is that legal?" I was like, "But that's probably the MMA still in him, man." Because you used to y'all used to just fight until the last drop, man. To that ref calls it, right?
Until the ref pulls you off. Of course. That was the thing with MMA, but. Again, I thought, to be honest, I really thought that he wasn't knocked out. I thought he was just trying to get away.
Now,
that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Now, I was watching the highlights, I think yesterday, you fighting Joey Beltran. I mean, you're 10 years older, and I swear it looks like you were in better shape than him, man.
I'm a lot better shape than a lot of those guys, man, because I haven't sustained a lot of damage over the years, and I stay in the gym. So when you're staying in the gym, I'm not dumb. Father Time is undefeated, but you can stop a lot of injuries, and you can stop a lot of things that happen to your body by always having it prepared. And so I'm always prepared because I get up every morning and I hit the gym.
Now, how early in that fight did you kind of pretty much knew that you was going to win this fight? Because it looked pretty early in that fight, like, oh, yeah, this is over. The Joey Beltran?
Yeah, to any fight, you're supposed to strike first. And you're supposed to establish ring presence right away. And with bare knuckle, which is all it is just boxing with no gloves. You have to establish the ring presence first, and I was told by a good friend of mine, Mr. So, that you have to get out first. And that's in any fight. You know, you just got to establish the ring presence right away.
Now, do you think some fighters might underestimate like conditioning, cardio, and like bare knuckle, even as like less rounds and shorter rounds?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that the shorter rounds, there's a burst of energy that you have to maintain. And it might be just a little bit more strenuous than 5 minute rounds, because you can kind of take your time with 5 minute rounds, but in 2 minute rounds it's right away. So that's where you have to establish yourself right away. You got to let your opponent know that you mean business within that 2 minutes.
Now, you fought Jeremy Smith. What was that? BKFC 33 Omaha. How important was that for you to headline that event?
You know what? Whether I headline the event or whether I'm first or in the middle of any event, man, you know, I just hope that the people still or not even hope. I'm just glad people still want to come out and see me fight because they know what type of fighter that I am. And so either you get there early or you're going to get there late My fight is always going to be that fight that's going to be on point.
It feels like watching it, you had the same game plan as the fight before. And
what, hitting kind of first? Not getting hit?
Because when I watched Jeremy Smith, he fought, I think it was the Steve Tomahawk guy. And it's like his fight style was kind of just put his head down and just kind of just throw them.
You know, Jeremy's actually a really good fighter, you know. And again, I think at times, you know, when you're a certain height, you have to make sure you hit those angles.
Yeah.
You know, look how short. And I'm not saying that, you know, people are short, but see, even Tyson's size compared to a lot of the people that he was fighting.
Yeah.
You know, even though he was head on, you know, he always hit them at angles, and he was always first. And so he smothered those people to the point where, you know, they couldn't react. So Tyson would be the best way to describe Jeremy, because, you know, he has to get that inner Tyson in him, especially William, as far as his height goes.
Well, y'all, I mean, y'all went like the distance on that. I mean, how exhausting was when you got in the fourth and fifth? I mean, it just looked so exhausted, man.
It wasn't that exhausting to the point where we were still fighting until the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, just the fact that if you look at the fight that he had with Tomahawk, I think, you know, in our fight, maybe they should have stopped the fight in our fight. Because they did stop it twice. And,
yeah.
And they should have stopped it then for Jeremy to not sustain so much damage. But, we were tired. But, you know, when you got the adrenaline going, you don't care. You just got to go.
Now, it's been about a year and some change since you fought. What, like, are you just trying to get to a certain fight right now? Or, like, what's the process of that?
I'm just waiting for the organization to move, man. Because, I don't like staying stagnant. And I'm just leaving it to the organization to... You know, they're saying they're having commission problems because of my age, but I honestly think that they didn't think I was gonna last 4-0.
Yeah.
I don't care who I'm in the ring with, you know, they're gonna get 110%. You know, these things. So I think the organization kind of are waiting to see what to do with me,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just waiting to see what they want to do, because I'm number one in my division, So I don't know why, you know, I would be sitting on the shelf right now. And if my age is a factor, you know, I've had the commissioner, the athletic commissioner from Nebraska tell the organization that, hey, I've never had a problem with his physical ability, any tests I've taken. I've always, you know, I've never not made weight. I don't know if anybody could even boast that. My 20-some years I've been doing this, I've never not made weight. I've always been in top shape. And even now, I feel like I'm in really good shape. So until somebody beats my ass in the ring, which is not going to really happen, because you're not just going to beat my ass in the ring, you know, let me go out and style. So
now
I'm just hearing a lot of excuses.
Now, when they say it's the commission, is that a specific state or?
And that's what I don't get. I heard, you know, the owner said something about he's having problems with the commissions and the athletic commissions, other states saying of my age. But I don't know. The athletic commissioner in Omaha, not in Nebraska, said that if any of those people need a reference on my physicality, my ability, and all my medical records that I've had my whole entire career in Nebraska, he said he'll co-sign for it. So I'm just waiting, man. So I'm just waiting.
Does anybody even hold the cruiserweight right now?
What's that?
The cruiserweight belt. Is that vacant right now?
I'm not even, you know, paying attention to that because I'm too busy training.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about the call. When I get the call. So, and it's always that way when you got a LeBron James doing what he's doing, you know, at his age. We're just in a different time era where if you take care of your body, and I take care of my body physically. And I do things internally to make sure I'm good. And if I'm still performing at a high level, why not let me compete?
Well, like you said, you're the number one ranked cruiserweight. When you go to the page, I don't see nobody holding the belt. They don't show no champion up there. So that means it's vacant. It should be number one against any one of the ranked guys, I guess, below you, right?
I guess, man. But I don't know how it works. All I know is I'm just sitting, waiting for an opportunity to get in the ring again. If I'm gonna go out, let me go out in the ring. Don't let me go out sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah, because you're number five pound for pound too. So that
rankings don't mean nothing to me if you're not fighting.
Yeah, and you know, and I've asked a few of the fighters that, like, they say the rankings to them are more of just like something for the fans and the consumer, basically.
Yeah, well, you know, ranking doesn't mean anything to me unless you're fighting the best people. And I don't mind, you know, if I fight the best, one of the best people in the bare knuckle, and I lose, but I haven't even gotten that opportunity to do so.
Yeah, that really sucks, man. I mean,
yeah,
you're 4-0, you're number one ranked, you're fifth pound for pound, and judges, you know, I just think this is why I interviewed somebody like Melo Lambert, who a lot of people think he shits on the BKFC because he's not part of it no more, but he has a few things that he throws in there. That's a great point about the politics of the fight game, you know.
I don't worry too much about politics, Paul. I just go out there, like I said, go out there, and I do the cliche thing. I train and get ready. So they got me sitting on ice, and I don't know why.
How many years would you say you still got left?
I'm feeling pretty good now. Out of those four fights, out of those four BKFC fights, I've not sustained any injury.
Yeah.
I've not gotten hurt. So that is a testament to all the things that we've been doing physically. So until I get to that point to where, oh man, I can't do this anymore, you know, I can go as long as I want. But you know, that's for the, you know, for the fans to see for themselves.
And I know there's got to be some young guys in there that's trying to make a name that would
Paul, I'm fighting guys that are in their 40s.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
You know, if you're in your 40s and you're still losing to a 50-something-year-old man, that's on you.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot how old Jeremy is. I think he's the youngest guy.
He's like 30-something, I think.
Yeah, if you're fighting the old guy and you lose, you know, take the L. let them see that, you know, that a guy who is my age is still winning and still fighting at a high level, like, you know, George Foreman was when he got the belt at 50 something years old. Just like a lot of those guys, the gentleman in the UFC, the Randy Couture. Randy Couture was still competing at a high level, you know, up until a certain point. So I get tired of hearing the age thing. Let me prove it in the ring first before anyone passes judgment.
Is this like the fight game trying to dictate, you know, how a fighter goes out? I mean, like, I would think fighters want to go out like I forgot who it was that passed away recently. Fat Man Scoob. I mean, he was on stage performing when he died, man. That's the way he wanted to probably go out, man.
I'm sure, you know, and you know what? I didn't think about that, but that's probably how, you know, he wanted to go out. He went out, you know, doing what he loved to do.
What he loves.
In front of people. But hold on, let me knock on some wood, Paul. I'm not going to have a heart attack in the ring. That's not how I want to go
out. But I'm just saying, you want to be able to do it. No, you can't do it no more. You know what I'm saying? You don't want somebody else to dictate that for you, right?
Yeah. Well, again, when I'm moving faster than a lot of those guys, and when I'm a little bit more accurate than those guys, and I'm still ducking the punches because you still got to hit me.
And you're still undefeated in the sport. Like, what are we doing here?
Still undefeated.
Yep. So, I mean, the goal is to get the belt, though, right?
You know, the belt is up, and to get the belt is there. If I have presented the opportunity, okay, that's cool. But wins add up.
Yeah.
And with wins adding up, it shows a body of work. And if you got a body of work when all you're doing is winning, what does that tell you?
You should still be fighting, man. I know that much. You shouldn't be waiting this long for a fight. I think somebody's playing politics here. We need to get down to the nitty gritty of this one, because you can't be 4-0, ranked number one in your weight class with a vacant belt, number five pound for pound, and everybody's just saying, "Oh, you're too old." That doesn't make sense.
That sounds like an excuse to me. I don't think people want. They don't want to see a 50-something-year-old champion. That might actually be a good thing.
I mean, but how old is Trout? He just got the belt.
Who?
Austin Trout.
I'm not for sure, man. I'm not for sure the age.
Yeah, and this is another thing. You think like bare knuckle has actually been able to extend some fighters' shelf lives?
It has been, because you got a lot of people who have come from MMA or have come from other sports who have gotten into the bare knuckle, you know, just and to me, a lot of people have lasted a little longer than what they should be.
And I've seen people have actually better careers in bare knuckle than they've had in MMA.
I will probably,
you know,
just understand that if I'm going to be in bare knuckle and someone asks me to box outside of bare knuckle, I am not going to get beat up like a lot of people who go from bare knuckle to boxing, because I actually know how to box. So.
Yeah. Now, what advice would you give like fighters trying to transition from boxing to MMA into bare knuckle?
Oh, man. Well, again, bare knuckle is more so like boxing, but you have to just stay a little bit tighter. So anybody who's thinking about getting into the bare knuckle, you know, you got to stay tighter, and you got to make sure you're moving just a little bit more, you know, because again, when you're getting hit with bare bone, you know, it's going to be a little bit more effective than getting hit with a glove. So, and for anyone watching this interview, the object of the game, any type of game, combat game, is not to get hit. Don't get hit.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out, man, to do the interview, man. I know you got a very busy schedule. Any shout outs you want to do before you go?
No, shout out, man. Shout out to you for even asking to do this, man, because it's all good when, you know, you can still do, you know, podcasts with people and help them out. So hopefully this kind of helps you out.
I appreciate it, man.
So, and shouts out to, you know, all the people that have been supporting me. So shouts out to all of my sponsors. And shouts out to all the fans, man. Because if we wouldn't be having this conversation if the fans weren't looking for me.
Yeah.
When you got people like Joe Rogan still shouting me out even several years later, you know, that's a big compliment to what we're doing right now.
Yeah. And you definitely are going to bring credibility to my show once I put the clips out. You know what I'm saying? Because one thing I notice about a lot of these people that do these interviews with Bare Knuckle, it seems like they only want to interview fighters right when they got a fight next week or something like that, or, you know, close up to the fight. Like, I just want to interview fighters in general. You know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't about, like, you got to have a fight right here and right then and there, you know, because, I mean, hopefully, you know, BKFC will see these clips and get their asses in gear and, you know, get you, know you another fight here soon, man.
And I guess in the defense of BKFC, you know, they're a startup organization, you know, and they're still getting their feet wet in a lot of things. And from what I understand, they got Conor McGregor involved.
Yeah.
You know, so you know what? They're on the rise as far as, you know, fight organizations. So, we got to give them some grace period, but I can't give them grace period when it comes to me sitting on the sidelines. Like, hey, I can't do that because, man, hey, I don't like sitting on the sidelines. And usually when you're sitting on the sidelines, that's not, you got to make sure you're in the ring. And when I did MMA, at one point in time, I was fighting once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got to keep that continuity. You got to keep that. You just got to keep that. That ring presence. I mean, when they say that you get ring rust, you know, sometimes you get ring rust. And it's not the ring rust that when you're training outside of the ring. It's the ring rust because outside of the ring, inside of the ring are two different things.
Yeah.
You got the crowd you have to deal with. You have the pressures of the anxiety and all. You got the cameras and you got the announcing. You got all those things that you have to deal with inside the ring that you don't have to deal with outside the ring. So you have to make sure you're inside the ring on a regular basis to get your body and your mind used to that, man.
Yeah, I'm hearing the standards from everybody is at least two fights minimal a year. Is like,
man, if it was up to me, I'd be fighting more than that. because you know what's the point? You know what's the point in always sparring when you could be fighting?
Yeah.
Especially if you haven't sustained any damage.
Yeah.
I don't get damaged, so.
Yeah, I mean, because you got Howard Davis. He literally just fought couple months ago, and now he's a backup in Spain. I mean, he went out there and didn't get touched at all. It's like,
and that's the interesting thing about it, man. That's why I'm just dumbfounded.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking time out, man. You're a friend of the show, man. Anytime you want to come back on, man, please do, man. Right. As soon as I get off here, I'm about to clip up some clips and put out a clip or two and put out the interview in a couple of days, man. And I'm definitely going to support anything that you post and do, man.
Well, Paul, hey, here's the podcast selfie right here. Boom. There's the podcast selfie right there, brother. I'm about to send it to you.
I appreciate it, man.
So, Paul, well, appreciate you, man. Hey, keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day, man.
All right, peace.
All right, peace.
Fingers kind of messed up.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The fingers are kind of messed up.
Yep. All right, take it easy,
fighter,
man.
Fighter's hands.
Well, there you had it. Houston, the assassin, Alexander. You know what's crazy about these fighters, man? I mean, these guys love to fight, man, but they're some of the most decent human beings that I could possibly interview, man. I mean, they're all just great human beings. Everybody I've interviewed has been a really decent person, man, and really great guys, man. BKC, we got to get him back in the ring. 4-0, number one cruiserweight, number 5 pound for pound. I mean, you heard him, man. He still got years left. Let's get him a fight. I need to be getting him that cruiserweight title fight, to be honest with you, man. Why it looks like that belt is vacant. And I appreciate y'all tuning in to another episode of the Paul Pickett Podcast. Peace, and I'm out.